excited. My little disclaimer, she says, oh baby, the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchie. Hope is here.
Hello.
And got a couple of special guests. First time on the show each, I'm pretty sure. It's two of our newest writers at Anime News Network. They're here to talk about. We're gonna have a little chit chat about reviews and the process of writing reviews. And so joining us is Gabriella Atkins. She's a student and currently reviews a little show called Fate Stay Night for us on the site.
Well, it ended.
And is a contributor to Shelf Life. Gabriella, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, nice to be on.
Okay, and the other guy who's joining us today, you can find his stuff at wrongeverytime.com, and he reviews such shows as Sound Euphonium and Nagato Yuki-chan and a whole bunch of other crap. and you can see his writing over on his site and on ours. It's Nick Creamer. Nick, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey guys, good to be here.
Okay, Hope, you got your start in anime reviewing, and you know, I kind of want to talk a little bit about how everybody got their start doing reviews, at least. And your story is a little bit different from most. So, do you want to sort of give us the abridged version?
Yeah, I can do that. My anime reviewing days basically started with wanting to be part of anime fandom in a way that I felt like I could do, because at the time I was like, oh, I'm really into this stuff. This isn't like going away. It's not just a fad for me. Like, I really want to get into this and study it and like basically create a dialogue with people about this stuff. But I'd cosplayed before, but I'm not a seamstress. Like, I can't do like cool cosplay stuff, so and I couldn't draw at all, and so the biggest communities were cosplay and fan art, and I was like, well, I can't do either of those. And I was like, well, reviewing is a thing. What's something I can do that isn't really being looked at much? And I was like, well, there's a lot of video game reviewers, like video type on YouTube. So I was like, well, I'll just do anime video reviews. And so that's what I did, and that's so I got my start writing scripts for video reviews and then editing, because I enjoyed the process of, and I still enjoy the process of editing and putting together video, like especially if you can make people laugh or be kind of cool or weird or something like that. So for many years I basically reviewed anime through video, which very few people were doing at the time, and I joined up with some other people who were doing it, eventually joined Giant, like, nerd video review aggregate thing, that guy with the glasses.com, stayed on there for way too long, left after having done a fair amount of written freelance for ANN, came back to do more freelance for ANN, and now I'm doing freelance and video for ANN in portion, and I'm the assistant editor for other editorial content that other people write. So I'm just mired in anime review content and opinion, like, all the time. But that was how many years? That was, like, so from there to now was a six-year process.
Right. And, like, your style was always, I mean, you know, back when, you know, you were becoming sort of notable, you hung out on the forums on ANN a lot. And
yeah.
Your style was considered cerebral. Like, considered, like, oh, you really dig into it and get at the themes and everything. It wasn't what people expected from, and I think, you know, YouTube anime reviews for sure.
Yeah,
they weren't right. Really expecting that. But that's generally, like, would that be, like, a good characterization of the response to your stuff?
Yeah, my number one interest with, and I didn't really know this until I got really, really used to talking about anime and looking at it, but, like, my number one interest in media criticism is, like, figuring out what, basically, as a conversation with the artist, figuring out what the artist wants to say, and then saying, okay, here's what I think of that, and whether I like it or don't like it, or just have feelings on it that maybe aren't positive or negative, but just, like, my goal and my greatest interest is, like, deciphering what the artist wanted to say through this. Sometimes not even intentionally, not if they had a message or had a theme, but just how they feel about the world and stuff like that, or what their sense of humor is like, that kind of thing, and why that's funny to them. And that's kind of my goal. And so, yeah, I guess it came off as like cerebral, and I guess it is, but it's mostly just me wanting to like create a dialogue with other people about an art thing, because I like cartoons a lot, and cartoons, you know, are my favorite kind of media format, but I like to talk about all media that way. But that's my chief interest, I guess.
Right. Nick, what about you? Where did you when did you get interested in criticism, and when did you start writing?
Well, I started writing basically years and years and years ago. I've always sort of mentally considered myself a writing type person. I've been writing my own fiction since like middle school. I sent a really, really terrible like fantasy novel to my college as like my sort of additional contribution thing, like my show something about yourself. Mm-hmm. Did a bunch of fiction writing in college and just sort of sideways found my way into criticizing anime through first Reddit, actually. I'd been at the time trying to work on my fiction and just sort of enjoying talking online with people about shows, discussing themes, discussing character arcs and whatnot. And originally my site, the Wrong Every Time thing, just sort of began as a kind of a backlog of all my stuff for Reddit. Reddit was the main deal. I was most well known on Reddit and the various anime and true anime Reddits. But then the blog got way bigger than that, and I just sort of began to sort of become more ambitious and more sort of self-critical in the ways I wanted to express myself, the sort of pieces I wanted to take on. And so it sort of just became this formal thing that I'm doing basically every single day, even just by myself before I was working for Anne. It was like, all right, I got work on today's project, got to get tomorrow's project ready, whatnot. It sort of just randomly came into being.
Right, and you had kind of built a following that way. You'd sort of built up a section of readers through Reddit, and then they sort of followed you to the blog, right?
Yep, and I talk with a lot of people I used to know on Reddit, on Twitter now. Twitter is sort of the main place I engage with people, and I've gotten worse about comments on my blog, but I really try to stay accessible, as accessible as possible, and, you know, constantly make it a dialogue between me and other people, what I'm talking about. Because I feel with my stuff, it's pretty important that where I'm coming from as a specific person is sort of critical to the kind of dialogue I want to start. And the things I find most interesting in media, or often find interesting in media, is how media interacts with people and sort of reflects something, not just universal, but the sort of the viewer and the piece can each sort of bring out something unique. The dialogue they have is what is unique to their experience with the media, and I want that to be understandable to other people, the experience I'm feeling while I'm engaging with a piece and what brings me to that.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. So, like, what kind of feedback early on, like, what kind of feedback did you get that sort of encouraged you to keep going? Like, this might be a thing for you.
Actually, it was, like, on Reddit, the sort of barrier for entry is non-existent. You can just, you know, respond to anybody. Anybody can say anything. And since I had done a lot of creative writing in middle school, high school, gone to college, got an English degree there, spent a couple more years writing outside of college, and then went to Reddit and started putting on essays, the feedback was very good. Someone who spent years and years honing their craft will get very good immediate feedback. So I wrote a piece about the cinematography in Nisei Monogatari, talking about how that show has sort of very purposeful framing in where it positions the camera. And, like, yes, the show indulges in fan service, but it also has something to say through just how the camera creates a dialogue of the character's headspace. And that got like 100 comments or something, blew up, got tons of great feedback, started tons of great conversations. And that was when I thought, all right, there's actually something here. I've made a lot of things, and this thing people like. People actually respond to this, and I can keep doing this.
That's cool. All right, so Gabriella, how'd you get your start?
Probably my first foray into anime criticism in particular was I used to watch Hope's videos back in the day. Like, I discovered them probably when I was around like 12 or 13.
Jeez,
and sort
all
of
connected.
What?
I said it's all connected somehow.
Yeah, followed her for quite a few years until I decided to sort of. Anime became a more permanent interest of mine, and then I decided to seek out more of a wider community of people who liked anime and, like, discussed on, say, like, Twitter. And that led me to sort of, like, forming a group of acquaintances that happened to include some people who were, and sort of, like, developed a critical conversation and some critical skills with that, but not at this point. I wasn't really writing myself.
Okay, so you built that up, and then when did you decide to you wanted to start writing your own full-length formal reviews?
I think the way that I'm different from Hope and Nick in this situation is that A&N was sort of like my sort of writing it all on a consistent basis. Like, I had done it for a little while beforehand, not intending to get anywhere, legitimate, like, for my own practice, because I've always been interested in media. I come from a very literary family. My mother loves books, and she raised me to love books, and I knew from an early age that I was going to study literature in college, and I do, alongside film. And sort of, and I also liked anime, so that critical attention to what a work says and how it goes about saying it was reared for me from an early age and extended to the way I interact with anime. And I would always consider myself more of a reader than a writer, but in order to do anything as a reader, you eventually have to start writing things, which means you have to start developing skills such as diligence. So I decided to practice on a sort of basically like an anime blog for about a summer. And that was when A&N started accepting resumes for the Daily Streaming Review position. So I submitted mine, not thinking it would really go anywhere. But then I was selected. Then I was astounded and very happy. I've been reading the site for a long time and really looking forward for the opportunity to work with a lot of people I'd admired and to start really developing some skills in really a more formal setting, since that is most likely where, if I want to do anything in the future with this, I will need to go.
Right. Well, you've definitely developed your skills in like angering type moon fans. Like, we know that's a thing.
Yeah.
Of course, I think everyone here has. So
All of us, haven't we all pissed them off at this point? All four.
Yeah, they don't
of us?
Like me.
How did that happen? We have diverse opinions, and we all four of us like made them angry.
So I'm sort of interested in how you approach your review, because I feel like this is really different for everybody, and it kind of defines, you know, what you wind up writing and who your audience ultimately is. And you know, for my part, I think I used to try to be a little bit more structured than I am now. Now it's like I have like this format in my head of I'll talk a little bit about what the story was. I try to talk about the meaning of it all, and generally, like, I come up with a list of what do I want to say about this movie. Are there like three or four things that I want to say about this movie I just saw? As long as I bang those out, I feel like the review works pretty well. Like, I've gotten way less structured over time and just much more. I'm almost on auto. I don't want to say autopilot, because that sort of intimates kind of detachment or anything like that. I'm still very engaged in everything. It's just, I don't know, I don't follow like this rigid structure anymore, and I'm way more interested in whatever immediately leaps to the front of my mind while I'm watching something, whatever the thing is saying the loudest to me. That's kind of what I want to articulate. I don't need the review to be all things to all people, and I feel like the internet's kind of democratized this stuff to the point where a critic doesn't have to be all things to all people. You can be an individual voice. You don't have to be this monolithic, authoritarian thing saying, this movie is blah. Like, you can just have your own voice.
Even if your opinion is this movie is blah.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that's kind of my approach. But I'm curious, like, when you sit down to write, like, what's your process? Where do you start, and what's your goal in the end? And Nick, why don't we start with you?
I definitely strongly agree with you with that, because the internet has so democratized criticism, basically, you don't really need to do a general purpose review that will, you know, hit all the points that are necessary for this. You can add one voice to the conversation, and that's actually more useful, because that's a unique voice that will actually say something that might be a bit more incisive or interesting. Mm-hmm. For my process, what do I do? I generally just the sort of basic immediate refrain is like, what is this work trying to be good at? Like, what does this work care about? And what can I say about that specifically? Which generally leads to, you know, bits and pieces about all the various formal elements of it. But I beyond that, I also try to think, like, what am I trying to say with this piece? Like, can I offer something in this piece that, as you say, wouldn't, or as I said in reflection on what you said, wouldn't be the default response to this? What can make this piece interesting? So, like, when I reviewed Kill la Kill, for instance, back on my old blog, I didn't like it that much. I didn't think it was that great, and I wasn't sure what to talk about in it initially, because normally when I respond to something, I sort of pick on, you know, some cool theme I thought was nicely illustrated throughout and follow it through the show. But I realized I could actually, with Kill la Kill, use that as sort of an illustration of my ideas regarding how conflict works in media and how you sort of need to have either tangible elements in the physical form or the emotional thematic form for conflicts to work. And by giving it that sort of hook, I was able to make something I thought was actually worth saying, as opposed to just saying, I thought this was a 6 out of 10. That's my review.
Without using the words kinetic or...
God damn it, yeah.
Mind-blowing action. Yeah, right.
Nope. No mind-blowing at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, but at the same time, like, what you just described, like, if you turned that into me, I would say, this isn't a review, this is an essay.
That's true.
I need you to write a review. So, but your reviews are very, you know, they're not intentionally all-purpose or, like, you're trying to hit all those marks. But when, like, you just, today we published your review of Castle of Cagliostro, and that is an all-purpose review. Like, it does hit all those marks, but it doesn't read like you're just checking off boxes. Like, oh, I better talk about the animation and the characters and the, you know, all this other stuff. It kind of weaves it together, but it, I still get across, like, this is, like, your strongest takeaway from that movie is, like, this is an exemplary, like... you understood why this was so beloved. Like, that's kind of the takeaway from that review. Like, there's one strong statement that feels like it's unique to you. And I feel like that's kind of determines whether or not a review is useful or not, is whether or not at the end of it you can walk away, provided it's not like an essay on the larger themes and something, and it is just a review, you can walk away with, like, well, that writer thought it was this, and here's why they thought that, and they can sum it up real quick.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I feel like that's good. And that Cagliostro review absolutely is like that. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
It's interesting because that's how, back when I first started doing the video review stuff, like, my approach was just hit all the points. It was way more structured. And every video was about 10 minutes long. And it's helpful because the YouTube length requirements back then were, I think, it didn't jump to, they were 11 minutes. So if it was 10 minutes and 39 seconds, I was good. But as time went on, after a couple years, like more around 2011, 2012, my reviews would each be half an hour long because I would do all that stuff, and then I would say, okay, here's the themes of the work, and I would go in depth with it. And, you know, not that every bit of material needed that, but sometimes it was really helpful. Like, my favorite thing that I did that with, because it got the most positive response, was either Evangelion or... Monica Magica, but because they're popular shows, but also because a lot of people responded with, oh, I didn't really know what to think of this, or I didn't know what the goal of this piece of media was, and now I understand it, and I know why you didn't like it, or why you did, or whatever. And, you know, I think Evangelion was the one that made me start doing those, because that was, yeah, Evangelion was the first one I did where it was 30 minutes long instead of 10, and then it was like, unfortunately, it made it so it took much longer to write each one, but, like, yeah, it was like I had to see those things as two separate things and then start doing both, because when I felt driven to do both. First, like, for something like fucking Kaze no Stigma or whatever, I didn't, back when that was newly released, I didn't do that. But every once in a while with an Ergo Proxy or a Modica or anything like that, where it was like, oh, right, more in depth. Even Paradise Kiss, it doesn't have to be like speculative fiction with heavy themes. It's stuff that I thought there was something interesting to talk about, then I would do that. But and now I generally, when I write something for the site, it is something where I'm like, oh, I have a bunch to say about it, and it's 2,500 words or whatever, but I got all my feelings out, so, you know.
Right. And Gabriella, what about you?
I'm not a very structured writer. I don't come in with a conscious plan of I need to write this at this point and this point and this point, although I make sure afterwards to, like, evaluate, say, an episode or whatever I'm reviewing on its quality. I've never been a very structured writer. I always got very low scores on the SAT portions of writing because I just cannot write to a formula in a set amount of time like that. I think my skill is that very early on, I developed something I think other people opinion on something as you watch it, and then being able to articulate that opinion, because I believe that everyone has a reaction to a work, but beginning, at least for them, it just manifests as like they have a good feeling towards it or they have a bad feeling towards it, and they really don't know how to explain it and sort of like seek other people to explain it for them and latch on to like whatever explanation like jives with what they feel. But as they sort of get into conversations about media or read more reviews, they start learning the vocabulary and like the methods of explaining how they feel about a work and how they feel it works. I think for whatever reason, that comes to me easily, and I can, and it is easy for me to express that in words and in a way that doesn't make me have to think consciously about structure very often. Like for the Daily Stream movies, I don't do that. And that means that they can differ a lot. Like I can turn in one that's like 400 words and turn in one that's like 2,000 words, depending on how I feel about an episode or whether I believe an episode can be used as like a platform to something deeper about a show, like an episode, say, where I decide to discuss in Yurikuma, where I decide to discuss sort of like the status of lesbians in Japan and how this illuminates the show as a whole for the entire, and this would serve as like an explanation for the entire show's run.
Right. Yeah. No, that's cool. I was gonna ask, like, so you mentioned like, you know, sitting down and figuring out not particularly structured. What is like the hardest thing to do? Like, what's the hardest kind of review to write? Like, when are you sitting there and just staring at the screen, and you don't really even know where to start? Like, what's the most painful review experience? Hope, do you have an answer for that one?
Mediocrity. Yeah. I mentioned Kazuno Stigma's joke because I remember that being in a string of longer reviews. That one was because it was a viewer request, a viewer commission, and that one was one of the shortest ones, and it took the least amount of time. But I didn't feel good about it. It was like 11 minutes when I was used to the more 20-minute ones at that point, and it was like. But that's an example, like pure mediocrity, where it's like this is product, this is a series, this is a tumbleweed through the. And, you know, the interesting thing about criticism is it can give you, even when you don't agree with somebody or when you feel differently, it can give you new avenues to think about that stuff and help you improve your own way of looking at media. And I promise I'm using a concrete example for this. But we recently published a piece about why the Dungeon Boob show, Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon show was good and why the writer really liked it. That was Theron's piece. And prior to reading that, I had never, like, I had tried to watch that Dungeon Boob show and was baffled by what on earth about it drew in anybody at all. I watched that show and I was like, this is the most generic thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, this has no, like, unique qualities, good or bad. And that's the big thing to me is, like, at least be unique. Like, if you are a horrible failure, falls on its face, like, at least give me something to talk about or something to explore. Especially when writing, if I have to write up a show and there's just nothing to say about it, it's bleak. And, anyway, so, but when I read that article, it was like, oh, I get what really draws people to this, besides it's like my D&D, it's like my tabletop, is, you know, the elements of family, a core structure of a family that you choose for yourself, being a theme in the show wasn't something I picked up when watching it, just because it's so goddamn generic. But like, I felt that when reading that when reading Theron's piece, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Well, I can kind of incorporate that into stuff that I watch that has some of those moe harem elements that's not gross, because there's nothing gross about the Dungeon Boob show. It's just really, really generic. And I was like, oh, I understand now why this gives people warm fuzzies instead of what it gave me, which was this blank canvas with a tumbleweed across it. And I say this as somebody who enjoyed Sword Art Online, not because it was a good show, but because it was bad in an entertaining way to me. But this was, you know, this was unique. I guess, so my point is, the hardest thing to write about, mediocrity. But, you know, ingesting other people's analysis and listening to what they have to say and, like, picking up other people's opinions, you can find some way to take a spin on even something that you feel you have no feelings about, just by, like, looking at how it affects other people. And, yeah, the starting a dialogue is really a core thing of criticism that can make things that are harder to write about easier to write about. And then, you know, you get better and better at it with practice, so.
Yeah, right. Nick, for you, like, what's the hardest thing? I mean, mediocrity is kind of the generic answer, but what is it?
It's not mediocrity for me, and it's not even bad things either. When it's something I don't really like, I can generally sort of rely on like the structure of a review, the formula. Okay, I didn't like this show's elements, but when I don't like a show, I can probably articulate what in it failed for me and what core sinews of storytelling failed to really connect to make it work. For me, the hard stuff is when something is good in a way that I have trouble describing. That it's like there's a great atmosphere to this, or the writing is strong in a level where I'd have to go line by line to actually tell you, okay, this is why this is really good dialogue. This is why these characters feel alive. So it's definitely the best shows that give me the most trouble. I feel like I wanna do justice to them. I wanna make a piece that's like deserving of them and that will actually convey the reactions they provoke in me, and it's just way more work for me to reach that point in my text where I'm happy with what I'm saying and feel it's really conveying that, versus when I'm just saying, okay, this show's dialogue, just these characters don't feel like people, and so I don't connect to anyone, and that's easy to convey to people.
Well, so given how strongly you were connecting with at least two shows that you were reviewing for the spring season, that must have been tough. Like, that's
oh my god,
lot.
This like, season! you are not wrong. I'm very happy that I got to review both my favorite shows this season, Sound Euphonium and My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu. But I've been working real hard on even just the weekly pieces. I sort of try to create a sense of tone and also convey a lot of the craft elements in every episode of Sound Euphonium. I try to go deeper into one of the characters' psychologies, whoever's being focused on that week in Snafu. And it's really rewarding to do that stuff, but it is way more work than just this episode was a B+.
Right. Right, yeah. Well, you would turn those in and be like, gosh, I wonder if it's going to be another A or an A+ for this show this week. And it always was, with few exceptions. But yeah, like, there was so much...
I'm kind of awkward about that. Someone even mentioned in, like, the comments for Euphonium, like, oh, geez, it's another A. I can't even trust this reviewer. But, I mean, I've done, like, Ds through As on basically every other show I've reviewed for the weekly thing. It's just these happen to be the two shows I've found the best of anything I've run into for
well,
this project.
I mean, I would have said something about those, like, A after A after A, if you weren't backing up why it deserved the grade every week. Like, if you hadn't dumped so much of yourself into those reviews, I would have complained and said, like, look, you can't just say this show is great A+ every week. Like, that's
I was gonna say,
ridiculous.
Gabbo had that with I'm having that with Blood Blockade right now. I gave it a couple B's, but it was even then. There was one week specifically where I gave it an A that was really an A+, but I was just trying to keep anybody from accusing me of pure hyperbole because it was the first not A+ it was giving the show. So I was like, there we go. Hey, I'm even handed. There we go. So I had that, but also Gabbo, like, I remember she
last season was
Yuri
nice.
Kuma and Maria the Virgin Witch were just like A's. Sometimes you can't help it. It's like, you know what? I honestly feel that this is great. And the way that we give streaming reviews out, which is the best way to handle it, is by people who is like, yes, this is my favorite thing this season, and it's like, so you're gonna get a lot of that, and that's fine. You don't want the alternative. You don't want somebody covering a show that doesn't understand it or isn't gonna appreciate it. You wouldn't want me writing up Dungeon Boobs,
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't, even though it's like, oh well, an alternate perspective. Yeah, but that would get real tiresome if you're writing about it and you don't understand it, and the fans know you don't understand it. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, daily streaming reviews are a different beast from like what you're talking about. The alternate perspective belongs in a full length review that is presented alongside the whatever the regular perspective is, I guess, if you want to call it that. Daily streaming reviews, by their very nature, have to be written by somebody who is fully engaged with the show and wants to watch it every week.
Can write more than, like, 500 words on 20 minutes every week.
Exactly. And it's funny because, like, initially when we were doing this, people were like, oh, I don't want you to put this person who's going to hate it on. And it's like, why? Okay, I'm not going to do that to them or you. Like, I'm not going to inflict that on the reader or the person writing it. Like, mm-hmm. That's just horrible.
Except for me and Rail Wars, but we were learning things.
Yeah, we were learning.
We're like, we have to cover Rail Wars, but nobody wants it. And I was like, I will be your guinea pig. But, you know, that we were just testing stuff out then. And even then, like, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, now we just wouldn't cover Rail Wars.
Exactly.
We would just tell someone to review it after.
We didn't cover Ultimate Otaku Teacher.
Yeah.
It was, like, low interest and nobody wanted it. And it was like, well, no then.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Daily streaming is a whole different beast. That's a different form of writing. But, Gabriella, for you, like, what's the hardest thing?
I've struggled a bit this season with some things. I had basically like the polar opposite of Nick's season in that he had two things that he was extremely passionate about, and I had a bunch of things that I just had to keep explaining how they kept messing up.
Three things that continually like disappointed. Well, like, the one thing that didn't disappoint you was like
Seraph of the End, which is
popcorn. So popcorn and two disappointing things.
The easiest thing in the world to write about.
Yeah.
The vampires did the thing again. Shinoa did something. Blah blah blah.
And probably the one you expected to be the worst of the three.
Yeah, it was pleasant and forgettable.
It had a sniper rifle that shoots tigers out of it.
Yeah, the Sherwoodian. The hardest part I had this season was honestly when Plastic Memories and Fates Day Night started repeating themselves at about the same time. They got into some ruts where just like the same there were new episodes, but they were just like continuations of the same flaws and the same subject, and I had articulated everything in the previous review, sometimes for thousands of words, and then I was delivered the exact same thing next week, and I'm just like, I have no idea what to say anymore. Like I'd already said, like, this pacing is unacceptable. Is there any way to say, like, this pacing is even more unacceptable when I already gave some sort of D?
Well, with Plastic Memories, it was funny because I remember the swing being... If I'm talking a lot about Gabba's reviews, it's because I oversee her as editor. Zach oversees Nick. And so I read your stuff too, Nick. It's just I'm intimately familiar with Gabba's struggle with some of these shows. And with Plastic Memories, it was really funny because you'd be like, yay! Like, it's doing what everybody hoped it was going to do. And then it would go back down into... like 10 minutes of bad comedy. What do you write about 10 minutes of bad comedy other than, God damn it, why are you doing this again? You know, so.
Something I have struggled with and that I think I've learned how to balance a little better is my expectations of what a show is, like my ideal version of the show based on, say, the premise and what a show actually is. And that's something I had to reconcile myself with both Fates Day Night and Plastic Memories in order to properly evaluate them. Mm-hmm. Like, with Plastic Memory in the end, except that it wasn't going to be a work of science fiction. It's a work of melodramatic romance and evaluated on those merits. It's not the worst ever. But it's not as much of a crushing disappointment as if you evaluated it as something that you want it to be rather than what it is.
Right, it's a science fiction show, which...
Yeah, the same with Fates Day Night, because of the expectations of another show. And I try to be very open because I think that the most important thing, like, I will never be free of biases or, like, what I want out of a show I like, but it would help the audience to know what I like so that they can understand my perspective and liking it and see if their perspective aligns with mine and whether I can help them by having similar tastes or give them a new perspective on a show from someone with a different taste and different sensibilities.
You know, I find that that's a really good point that if you're more upfront with just what you like about what you like in things, like if a show has an element and it has an element you like, so like say like you're really like, you know, gothic romantic vampires, say like you're a unique snowflake that really likes that. And then you're reviewing Seraph at the end, and you're like, look, this is kind of a B show, but it gets an A- for me because I really like this kind of vampire. Like, the audience will forgive you for that. They'll be like, oh, that, yeah, me too. Like, you can't go wrong explaining your biases and then scoring it a little bit higher based on, well, I happen to really like this, and I think this show does a good job at it. Because fundamentally what you're saying is, I'm a fan of this kind of material, and this show is doing it in a way that pleases me. Therefore, the show's doing a good job, you know, so it's kind of hard to argue with. If you go in the other direction, which is, you know what, I really don't like gothic vampires, so this show would get a B+ for me, but instead it's getting a B- because I don't like gothic vampires, then the comments would be, well, then why are you even reviewing this? Why are you even talking about it? And to an extent, they have a point. Like, why are you reviewing it if you don't like gothic vampires? The temptation to dive headfirst into black and white, like, oh, well, if you don't like X, then you shouldn't review Y. You know, if you don't like all science fiction, then you shouldn't review any science fiction, you know, that kind of thing. That's kind of bullshit. But for daily streaming especially, if you just say, look, I really like this kind of thing. Like, I reviewed Death Parade. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really like crazy depictions of the afterlife, specifically, like, if there's any kind of visual representation of, like, hell or purgatory, I just really like that stuff. So I just said, like, I really like that. This is a cool version of it, and so it's going to get high marks from me.
You also, you are also super into, like, tasteful, sharp production values.
Yeah, right. That show looks good, too. So exactly. That helps. So long as you explain that, people are cool with it. But you can't go in the other direction, which is an interesting...
it's a problem it's not a problem with full-length reviews, but because at some point you'll be like, oh, maybe I can't, and you sort of like can ride the bicycle backwards and somebody else can take it if you give up on a show. With streaming reviews, it's difficult because we assign these after like one episode or two episodes, and sometimes, as in the case of Plastic Memories and several other shows in the past, I think Nagato Yuki-chan is another one yep. of these, the show becomes a different thing and nobody was expecting it. And both Plastic Memories and Yuki-chan were like that, where it's like, you think it's going to be this, but then without warning, like, it turns into a different show. And so what do you do? The accusation of, like, well, you shouldn't even be reviewing this if it's not your thing or whatever. And it's like, well, it started as a different thing.
Yeah,
so
it's like, you didn't know it was going to this either.
Yeah, nobody fucking knew, you know? And it's, you know.
I think it's all... I think it's always a balance. People, like, if you're passionate about something, like a genre or a type of work... I think you will write better about it, and people will want to read what you have to say about it, especially people who are aficionados themselves. Even if what you like, I think that people who like, say, fan service shows would like hearing what someone who likes fan service shows has to say, even if the fan service show would be garbage to me with my tastes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's valid.
Yeah. And the ideal is you have a publication that hires enough people so that these viewpoints are all represented.
Yeah.
But you can, like, you know, how many hundreds of people would you have to hire in order to make it so that you're literally representing, like, every reasonable viewpoint, you know?
We have, like, you know, 4 on bigger reviews and then, like, 8 on streaming reviews. Like, we do what we can, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can normally find a balance between someone who's, like, a strict fan of this kind of thing and someone who can at least give it a fair shot and be, you know, kind to it to the degree it requires to make, like, a reasonable-sounding review.
Right. Yeah, there's a balance to strike. One question I had that... this happens to me, and it happened to me really recently. I'll review something, and I am intimidated by it. I'm intimidated by the idea of having to write about it in an intelligent way. I recently had to review The Wind Rises, and I don't think I've ever been more intimidated by having to review a film. Because that movie is the most famous and decorated anime director in the world, one of the most celebrated filmmakers of all time, and this is his final movie that also serves as a sum-up of how he feels about his contribution to the world. Like, it doesn't really get... I was terrified to write that review. Like, I really didn't want to do it. I'm like, I have to sound really smart if I'm going to write this. I have to really know what I'm talking about. Because, like, you know, I'm aware of the visibility of our platform, and if our review of that movie is garbage or it's not well considered, I feel like that would be a big black mark on my career. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I was under an intense amount of pressure to get that right. And I'm wondering if any of you have ever felt that way about having to review something. I mean, Gabriella, I'm sure you are a little trepidatious about Fate Stain.
I have to say, I did not anticipate this blowback. It really staggered me. I had opinions on the visual novel going in, and I thought it would be an interesting exercise in comparing an adaptation to comparing a new adaptation to a bunch of different points of entries and seeing how it tries to adapt to those. I guess where I really resonate with you on the Wind Rises thing is with the Yurikuma Arashi reviews I wrote. Because I'm a big fan of Iguhara. I've been a fan of him for years and years. And he's coming out with a new show, and I was slated to write it. And it felt like a victory, but then I realized that I would have to actually be the one who's trying to decipher this and present this to an audience of quite a few people. I didn't know how to approach that at first, but sort of the way that I ended up trying was to, when I don't know how to approach something, I seek out more information. So I decided to seek out information on what I felt the show's topics were. I found there was already some speculation going around about its influences, like the Suspiria thing and the Stanley Kubrick, the visual callbacks it had. So I would seek those out. I would start seeking out some books on like the what it's like to be queer in Japan, because I realized writing that I didn't have to start out the informed source before I sat down to write this, but I could become it by seeking more knowledge, seeking other perspectives, and interpreting them and trying to present them in a way that was accessible to other people while being transparent about where I'm coming from, and also just helping people who may not have the resources or maybe like the experience of reading media that I am fortunate to have had. I want to be the one who helped. I want to be the one who helped articulate what the show is saying to other people, mm-hmm. when it's infamously from an infamously like not obscure but impenetrable director.
Right. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, those reviews seemed like they were very difficult to write. Like I never would have wanted to tackle that show or any Ikuhara thing for daily streaming. It just
what was the longest one that you turned in, Gavo? Was it 3,000 or was it like
2,400 words?
Is that the first one?
No, it's one of the middle ones.
I remember getting it. You know. But it was, but yeah, those were always really, really, I could tell you were doing like an insane amount of research for those, and, you know.
It was a very valuable experience, and I learned just as much as I hope learned, and it helps for me to think of myself in these situations, not as someone who starts out with this responsibility, although the responsibility comes to me as someone with a platform and someone who people turn to in the situation, but also someone who is in my own process of learning, both as a writer and as who's able to interpret a specific property at a specific time.
Right. Nick, have you ever been kind of intimidated by something? Like you sort of dreaded what would happen if this review didn't go well?
Well, I mean, as I said, the hardest reviews for me to write are the ones where I really like or respect the thing. So this happens to me pretty frequently, actually, because I generally try to pick things that I think I'll actually enjoy watching. I've gotten to review like Eccentric Family and recently Ping Pong, just stuff I really felt, you know, I deeply responded to and felt there was a lot of interesting stuff to articulate in them, and just actually living up to that and doing the work justice was tricky. Even I did an old piece on Utena as well, actually. So what a surprise. Ikuhara is hard to write about.
Yeah.
I definitely get that feeling. Basically, whenever I'm approaching something that's either it's an allotted work. So I got a bit of it with the Cagliostro one, though I actually did some research for that. So I felt pretty good about that one, or just a work that I personally find really rewarding.
I have to say that do you think by writing, because I think that's what I do. I work through my feelings about a show and what I think it's doing by the process of writing the review.
Yeah, that definitely happens to me a lot. I generally have sort of more loose thoughts as I'm watching. And also, actually, I just take notes as I watch basically everything, which sort of, you know, helps it congeal better in my mind. But it's when I'm doing the review, I'll think, oh, that's how that thought all clicks together. Now it makes sense as I'm just reading my own words.
Do you guys have the thing where you're writing a review and you're not quite sure where it's going to go, or you know you have to write this review, and you like, I don't start writing in earnest until it has clicked in my head. So like, I just recently had to write up Spirited Away, which was another fucking intimidating thing to write about, being the only anime to ever win an Academy Award.
mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to write about that until I was like, well, what am I going to say? What is this movie about? And then I did some reading, and I, you know, did some thinking, and I rewatched the film and everything, and it clicked. And once it clicked for me, that review was done in like a very short period of time. Like I wrote it really fast. I'm just wondering if that happens to you, where like a light goes off, and you're like, oh, it's about this, and then you just then it, the words just spill, just come spewing out of your hands.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the intimidating review thing, like, because I feel like I have very different feelings from you three on the matter. You all have different feelings to begin with, and I think mine is separate too, because I've never felt intimidated by something because I liked it a lot or because it was good. That just means I like really, really slobber over it, and I'm like, I need to write about this. I want this one. Like, for Attack on Titan and Kill la Kill, I had to write about Kill la Kill 5 times, but somehow, each time, I was like, you know, I still have things to say. There is more. I do still have more feelings to elucidate, and it was, you know, it wasn't intimidating just because I liked it a lot, and I understand that. I understand that feeling in theory, but I've never been personally intimidated by something because I liked it a lot or because I thought it was really great. I was like, when was the last time I felt intimidated by a thing that I wrote? And I was like, oh, this is what intimidates me when I write a thing. The last thing that kind of spooked me was Gatchaman Crowds, having read about that, because the thing that intimidates me in criticism is when I understand a work and I have to write when I have to say this is fine, when I have to say that I am criticizing something because of its worldview, because that is terrifying, because the world will just get pissed off at you for saying that something is political. But all art is political, period. Like, even if it's not, even if it's just meant to be entertainment, then it is political, like, straight up. That's if somebody is expressing a viewpoint, how they feel about the world, what they think is funny, even if it's just a dumb comedy, what they think is funny and why, it is political. It means it is grounded in the world that we live in and based on that person's experiences and beliefs about the world, so it's political. But Gatchaman Crowds was, like, actually really political.
And yeah, very political show.
And I didn't know that when I was watching it and reviewing it. I just knew that it was like a really unique thing that had like stuff to say, but I thought maybe it was thematic or universal, like a Urobuchi show or something like that. But it's like, oh no, this is about like real world stuff, and I don't agree with it at all. And that was hard. So I had to write up that review from the perspective of, I strongly disagree with this guy's perspective on life, the universe, and everything. And it was really like that was scary. So it's scary when it's like, okay, we have to talk about real world things in this review, and I can't not, because it's part of it. So yeah, the Gatchaman Crowds review was scary. The reception to it was fine. Like, a lot of people disagreed with me, but I felt like it was fine. Like, some people got upset, but it didn't turn into like a horrible nightmare. It was just like, that's the scary thing, is when I have to talk. I love talking about that stuff, but when you are having to say the writer of this work is wrong by my perspective, like I disagree with them on a fundamental worldview level, that's the scary part, and you have to write about it. Like, that's what.
I don't think Gatchaman Crowds would be the kind of show that would inspire that kind of crazy feedback. Like, as a fan of Gatchaman Crowds, I can say I do not feel offended by you not liking Gatchaman Crowds.
Well, you may be one of the only people, because that you see a lot of offended people.
Well, I got a lot of people that were with me, too, which it didn't turn into a nightmare, because there were a lot of people who felt the same way. It's just that, yeah, there were people who were very angry, but what I was saying wasn't new. Like, my criticisms had come up a lot from other perspectives, and I was just putting them in a big block of text. So,
yeah, right. I'm just saying that show has very rabid fans, and they were not pleased with your take on it. I'm not saying all the feedback is negative.
You know, the great thing about the internet, you can just turn it off. Trolls aren't real. Yeah. Oh no, I have to talk about this.
Yeah. Know. That's interesting. So, I mean, going back to what I was saying, does anyone process that way where, like, you have to search for the one thing you're going to build the review around, and then you can't really start writing until that crystallizes for you?
I begin writing by jotting down my first idea. I don't write, I write paragraph at a time, and then I organize those paragraphs into the final review, and I tend to write the conclusions, introductions last. So that means I basically cannot write anything of length on pen and paper, because you cannot do that without a computer. But I generally start off by documenting my immediate reactions, and those tend to blossom into greater points as I begin to congeal them into what I felt about the show as a whole. The reviews tend to come out pretty fluidly for me. I duck. The one that took me the longest was actually the most recent editorial, but that was a much more methodical piece. Break after watching something before writing about it, but after I get out one idea, like, the other ideas tend to connect easily, even if they are not in sequence.
Right. Okay, I think I understand. Nick, what about you?
I have written things one paragraph at a time before, and for me, I basically always regret that. I always end up with, like, a bunch of paragraphs that sort of work as a piece, but aren't quite, they don't quite have a spine or anything, so there's just sort of this mush of paragraphs, and now I've got to rework it, and I could move this here and this here, but, I mean, I wrote these sentences that really aren't useful unless they're already in this exact place, and I really don't want to rewrite these three paragraphs over here because I'm really happy with them, but they don't really work if I were to restructure it into a structure that actually works, and so I always try to start with a firm outline, and even then it's like sometimes I'll get that light bulb clicking that you were talking about where, all right, I've got the core of this idea and I can go from there, and sometimes even with the outline it'll just be one sentence at a time fighting my way through it, but without the outline things go really, really south for me. Like for that new for that recent editorial I did on Snafu, I sort of wrote that in sections at a time, and it was excruciating to try to fit them into a structure that made sense after that. It was a bad call by me.
Psychologically, I can't do the... I know a lot of people write the introductory paragraph last.
Yep, me
I
too.
Can't. I can't do it. Psychologically, I can't do it because what happens is I get to the end of what I have to say and then I want to be finished. Hmm. And if I have to go back and write a fucking introduction right then, it's going to be terrible. I'm not going to want to do it and it's going to be like pulling teeth. So like that is when I'm like, why did I do this? Because... I'll think back and I'll be like, I don't even know how to start this review now. Because I already said everything I want to say. So if I force myself through the introduction first, the rest of it tends to just kind of flow out.
No, I'm closer to Nick and Gabo on this, where it's like, because I know how you write. I've seen you like just like, it's like you're printing something. Like you'll not start for a while, and then you just print out the whole thing, and you're done, and it's easy. And I'm like, because I can't do that. What I do is like I find the most interesting core thing to say about a work. Like for Attack on Titan, it was I was like, why is this a hit? Like for Attack on Titan, I wanted to write from the perspective of why do so many people like this extremely, in theory, off-putting, gory, like late night sort of thing? Why is this, you know, why is Japan covered with like giant titans putting hamburgers in their mouths and stuff like that? Like this would be, you would think, when you describe the plot, this could be like an 80s OVA or a late night thing just for otaku who like gore, and it just. It's just, you know, like, why is this a huge thing that, like, kids are watching and stuff like that? So that was the most interesting thing to me. And then, like, my point is, like, whenever I write a review, I'm like, what is the most interesting thing that I can say about this thing? I put that in the middle, and then I write all of that, and then I put the dressing on the sides. Like, whatever, like, if I'm talking about the animation, the introduction, and the conclusion. And the introduction and conclusion are usually related to whatever my main point was. And then, and for Kill la Kill, I had to do that five separate times with five separate ideas yeah. from the show. And most of it's in the first one, and I kind of slacked off on the next couple. But by the end, I was back to, like, talking about big ideas in the show. But yeah, like, I can't start from the beginning and go to the end. I can't do it at all. I start from the middle, and then it blossoms back out to the top and the bottom. So...
Right, yeah. I don't know, man. That process can be really brutal sometimes. But sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's very rewarding, and you feel like you're trucking right along, and it just kind of just comes out of you. It's good times. Okay, so we should get to these Twitter questions, because we got a few. Kaylin Evergreen asks, how do you deal with the barrage of negative comments? Do you just ignore the threads, or is there some other method? So this is probably, like, you know, we got a lot of questions in this vein. How do you deal with negative feedback? And I'm curious because my attitude towards this now is wildly different from how it was 5 years ago, is wildly different from how it was 10 years ago. Like, I feel very different about this now, being, you know, older than all of you and having done this for a very long time. I feel really different about it. So I'm very curious, like, how you guys deal with it internally. Like, how do you process it? And Nick, why don't we start with you?
I guess just the best I can. I wish there were some sort of magic solution to making negative feedback not feel awful, even if it's like clearly bizarre comments, even if obviously there's no rational reason you should take this seriously. But it builds on you. It's just like small cuts over time, and I'm not really sure what the solution is. You know, I try to surround myself with just like with positive people who will bring me up, so that stuff doesn't bring me down as much. But and I found, you know, people say, oh, you have to look through the negative for like constructive criticisms or whatnot. I the cost benefit for me of looking at stuff framed by someone who seems like they hate me to see if they might say something incisive in the middle of it is for me much less valuable. Just it weighs on me versus just going to people who I know like me, who will still be willing to criticize my work, or at least respect me, will still be willing to criticize my work and improve my work that way. The negative stuff, it's just a psychological weight, and I just avoid it when I can and just deal with it the best I can when I can.
Okay. And Gabriella, what about you?
For me, it's odd because it doesn't usually sting much while I'm reading it. It has a few times when I find something particularly nasty, but then I just stopped going down those wells. And
yeah, it's a good idea.
It's and lost nothing. But the way it's manifested for me is just like a growing like discouragement or sense of dis-ease with, say, like my Fate's Day Night reviews. Like I have not always felt that I've made like that I've approached it perfectly, but I feel I've always approached it sincerely. Like nothing I've ever said in those reviews was calculated for effect. It is sincerely what I believe from the show. But that at worst, like, the response made me feel like I was somehow, like, putting on something when I wasn't.
Right, you were like, posing for attention instead of just being honest.
Yeah.
It's a really common refrain. Like, the internet is all about trying to, like, 90% of the comments, 90% of negative comments are trying to show how your subjective opinion is objectively wrong. That is always what they want to do. They always want to say, well, this opinion is wrong and you shouldn't ever listen to it. Objectively, it's incorrect because they didn't think about whatever. And it's always a subjective disagreement. Like, if you break down the argument they're making, it is always subjective. Like, it is always, well, because she doesn't think this character is hot, as though that's not a subjective call. Mm-hmm. Like, that's always what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But that sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, the worst I've ever done is genuinely, like, make me feel as if, like, somehow I am putting on a guise when I know I'm not, and make me feel afraid of that. Like, that's somehow subconsciously coming out, and they are correct. But then I speak to a friend, and they reassure me, and I feel back, and I'm doing my job again. And it's sort of like an invisible burden. Like, I didn't realize it was hitting me until I just started feeling really down about writing the reviews. And that's when I realized that it was really starting to weigh. I think I'm fairly resilient, but even then, even like the most outwardly resilient people end up carrying some baggage because of that. They let it out, like, not in public.
What about you, Hope?
So, my relationship with feedback has changed a lot in 6 years. 6 years ago, I started doing this for feedback. Basically, I started doing this to create a dialogue with people and just, like, selfishly, like, eat up opinions. Just, like, I would put my opinion out there and then other people would respond and I would just, like, consume it. And that was basically what I wanted. I wanted feedback to everything that I said, not in a, I guess, like a congratulatory, like attention-y kind of way, but in a, here's what I think. Like, oh, that's what you think, here's what I think. Whether they were agreeing or disagreeing or just had a different perspective. I just wanted to, like, eat up perspectives, I guess. Over time, that changed when it became about me, especially when I was on camera and stuff like that. And then I didn't want it, I didn't care for it. And so I went off camera more and more when I was doing the video stuff. Because it was like, I don't want this to be about me, and you guys are terrible. And, like, ANN is minor leagues compared to YouTube and TigWatig community comments and stuff like that. So when people are talking about the show, they say, you're wrong because this, that, the other. about a show. Like, they can be as negative to the show as they want. They can say, like, they can say Blood Blockade Battlefront is shit, and you don't know what you're talking about, and they can say that a million times in as many, like, very direct, crass ways as they want, and it does not bother me. If they make it about me, if they make it personal, then it starts to hurt, and then it's like, oh, I'll show you, like, you don't know me, you don't know me, like, chest dumping, like, you know, fists in air. And it's like you have to tamp that down. You have to calm down and just be like, it's the internet. It's fine. It's not a big deal. And it's like, you can't diminish your own feelings. You can't diminish the emotions it gives you because you need to like get those out. But you have to diminish the weight that you put on what that person is saying, because you're right. They don't know you and they are being awful. And you just have to like admit that they're being awful and it can affect you and that's okay. But, like, yeah, like, when people say, they're like, oh, harsh criticism, this person disagreed with what I had to say. I love that. I love it when people disagree with what I have to say and they want to really talk about it. That's great. I don't love when people are terrible. Especially when they're terrible to people like Nick or Gabrielle or any of our other writers saying that they're insincere or whatever, or that they're doing this, or that they're writing something to piss people off. And it's like, they are writing purely from their own hearts. Like, I know this emphatically, and so it really makes me angry when people say that. But yeah, I like to think I have a really thick skin when it comes to a lot of stuff, but, like, don't make presumptions about me personally, man. You know, it's like, don't go there. That kind of thing.
I have to say that, like, before I started doing these reviews, like, hate watches seemed, and, like, hate reviews seemed like they'd be fun, but after, like, the first season, that completely turned around.
Yeah, it's not there fun is, over and over. It's like
there's nothing more exhausting than having to write about something you dislike over and over and over again. Now I am most happy when I am surprised by how good something is.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of teaches you, like, the idea that some people have that, like, oh, you just want to hate on something. It's like, do you know how tiresome that gets? Like, it gets old really quick. Mm-hmm. Like, really, really fast. Like, it's not, like, super fun to sit there and just take something apart. You know, it can be. It certainly can be. But most of the time, not really.
I feel happiest about a review when it's, like, passionate and joyful.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have to, as I say, when you mentioned that, so I went ahead and looked it up. I was like, oh, you're talking about back when we first started daily streaming, and it was a little bit more like, yeah, if you want to hate watch something, we can... Like,
we said no hate watching.
Well, yeah, we said
right
no
up front,
hate
absolutely,
watching.
That was a rule, no hate watching.
It wasn't we assign you to something you're going to dislike. It was, we felt we had to cover everything, and there were things that nobody liked. And so we were more okay with, okay, well, and now we know we don't have to cover everything, and if there's nobody on staff who wants to talk about a thing, then we just don't cover it. So, yeah, but we didn't, like, intentionally put people on hate watches. We were just more like, well, you know, you seem like you would be... enthusiastic. There we go. Enthusiastic to write about this, even if it doesn't mean that you like it. But now we don't do that like at all anymore. We're a little bit more conservative, and we're more metered with what we want to cover. But like, what I was bringing up was, you were referring to like the thing that taught me it's not fun to write about Haywatch was Dramatical Murder, I assume. And I just wanted to bring up that Dramatical Murder was worth it because. There's a review that starts with, "The show finished up by finally providing the only thing I wanted out of it: hot gay blue dog action." And I
yeah.
just wanted to point out that you got to write that sentence, so it was all okay.
Yeah, that was my dessert, my hot gay blue dog dessert.
Yeah, I don't know. My attitude towards negative feedback has changed like a million times, and right now I feel like I'm pretty zen with it. Like, I kind of see it like. It used to kind of, like, if you think about this in terms of, like, real world, so, like, if the internet were the real world, which thank God it's not, if you walk down the street, consider it, like, people giving comments or feedback on what you're doing is just people yelling at you from the street. Mm-hmm. So if you walk outside, the first time somebody goes, "Hey, ugly," and you're like, "Oh, man, am I ugly?" And then you go home and look in the mirror, and you get sad, and the next day you go out, and you hear the guy yelling at you once again that you're ugly. And then someone else goes, "Well, I think you look fine." And you're like, "Well, thanks." But then if you get two more uglies, you're going to be upset and go home and think about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, like, to stop this tortured analogy, effectively, like, you just have to get used. There's always going to be the guy that stands there and goes, you're ugly, and you're not. And if you, like, why do you care what that asshole's opinion is? Like, he has no impact on you. He means nothing to you. Like, say, like, you're, like, walking in the grocery store, and you're in the produce section, and there's someone else buying bananas. Do you stop that person and ask them for, like, their feedback on your opinion on anything? Like, hey, I think this banana's pretty yellow. What do you think? Well, I think you're a dumb asshole, because that banana's green. Like, you have to learn how, like, whose opinion and what kind of feedback you care about. And, of course, I mean this on a macro level. I don't mean, like, oh, I only listen to, like, three people. But you have to figure out, like, pretty early on, like, who's worth listening to. And you're not the devil for not giving a shit what someone thinks if they can't even afford you, like, basic decency, like, basic politeness, a little bit of respect. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to talk to you. Like, if you're not going to talk to me like a human being, I don't give a shit what you think about what I just wrote. I don't care. Your opinion means nothing to me. And that's okay.
Yeah, it's like, you can be candid with me. You don't have to, like, be, like, simpering and kiss my ass. You can be candid with me, but don't be cruel. Like, don't be...
If you open your review with, I'm gonna murder your firstborn child, guess what? Like, you have lost your ability to get my attention or to make me care about what you think about what I wrote at all. And, like, I feel like that's a pretty healthy way to do it, because you can weed those people out really quickly and easily. And to your point, like, I feel, like I said, I feel like I'm pretty zen with this, because I'll see a bunch of that stuff and be like, whatever, I don't care. You know, last August, this stuff all got a lot more angry and hateful about a year ago when, you know, Gamergate happened and people suddenly decided that now let's be really fucking mean about everything all the time. Weeding all those people out became a lot easier, but at the same time, even if I'm weeding all these people out, I have a thing where I will eventually, like, if there's enough negativity, I have to stop looking at the internet for a day or two. And I mean, like, I'll do my job and everything, and I'll still kind of look at the feedback a little bit, but, like, I will kind of disconnect. I have to reset. It's almost like a jar that fills up. Like, once the negativity jar is full, I have to go pour it out again. And it's sort of a mental exercise. Like, I'll meditate or go for a long walk or something to get it all out of my head, and then I start fresh with, like, an empty jar. And then that one gets filled up, and then a couple of weeks later I gotta go do it again. But I find myself having to reset every so often. I mean, Nick, that's kind of what you were talking about, where it's like, eventually it's just too much and you have to walk away from it, no matter how great you are at not giving a shit what some jerk thinks of your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's like an attitude you cultivate. You want to be able to turn the sort of mental volume knob on opinions that start off hateful all the way down. But there's always going to be some feedback that those things create.
Yeah, right. And, you know, as the editor of the site, like, the really shitty stuff, the stuff where people are being really cruel, you know, depending on the level of cruelty, a lot of that stuff I will just throw out. Sometimes if I feel like they're getting at something that I've kind of suspected was true, it will help me a little bit go towards the conclusion I was kind of already coming to on my own. So that's kind of the value. Like, sometimes there's, like, a little nugget in there where maybe they're reinforcing something you already thought or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean, like, oh, yeah, I sit and comb through people wishing death on me and my family. Because they might have a point. I don't fucking care what your point is if you're going to be cruel. Like, I don't care. And I don't understand why I would. Like, any single one of those people, if you said, okay, you're in a classroom, and you say, well, I think Jimmy Carter was a great president, and someone stands up and says, I'm going to murder your father in front of you, and you're wrong about that. Like, you would not give that guy 2 seconds of your time. You would probably call the police, because that guy just gave you a violent threat, like, right in front of you.
Mm.
Like, if you contextualize a lot of internet bullshit in terms of the real world and what you would put up with people in the real world...
Mm-hmm.
Like, that helps a lot. And it helps justify a lot of times when you don't want to listen to somebody.
I mean, I think it'd be a lot healthier for everybody if many more people saw the internet as, you know, a personality that is an extension of yourself, and in, like, both directions there.
I've also, beyond the very rude people, I've accepted that even amongst the polite people, I'll never be able to please everyone. Not everyone is going to always be my fan. And that's okay. people have different approaches to things sometimes from me, just like irreconcilable perspectives, and that's fine so long as I myself learn from a piece I write and a significant amount of people like who read it seem to enjoy it and profit from it. I'm happy. I'm don't seek out to please everyone who will ever read it because that's impossible.
Right. Yeekery asks, do you feel there's an upcoming trend of people who look for anime titles because of how bad they are? I mean...
Upcoming.
I mean, there are people who just look for bad stuff to watch. I do that sometimes.
Me too.
But I wouldn't say that's I wouldn't say that's a trend.
No, I think it's always been... that's an old thing. Like, and it's not just with anime, it's also with movies and stuff like that. Looking for something because it makes your jaw drop and you wonder where it came from and why, and you just want to, like, laugh at how seriously it's taking itself. All that stuff, like, hate watching, quote-unquote. You know, it's not a good stance to review from, but for enjoyment, like, I think it's just as valid a form of enjoyment as sincerity. You know, and everything in balance, like... You can't be super sincere about everything all the time. Sometimes it's fun to watch Monster Girls or whatever, you know. I mean, right. And some people can, and everybody enjoys things differently, so some people are going to enjoy Monster Girls sincerely, you know. So I won't be one of those people, but, you know.
Okay, Haku Cat asks, how does the order work for who gets what to review? Are personal requests involved? Okay, so presuming that you're asking about physical releases, this is how that functions. Basically, I get in screeners, I send out an email to Nick and Hope and Theron and Rebecca, and although that pool is going to widen here in a little bit, I send out an email to them and say, here's what I have. Claim what you want. And everyone takes what they want. If there's a conflict, like both Theron and Nick want to review something, they will each say, like, well, I really want to do this because of blah or whatever. Usually one person goes, oh, okay, that's fine, just go ahead and take it. Like, typically I don't have to, like, step in and make that call, but sometimes I'll have to be like, no, it's going to this guy or whatever, and that's usually based on how much stuff that person already has to review. So, like, if Nick and Theron both want the same title and Nick has two things to review and Theron has four, it goes to Nick because blah, blah, obvious reasons. So, yeah, that's kind of how it works. Personal requests are the core of that. It's everyone takes what they want to do. Answered that. And Valid Name has an interesting question. He asks, which shows from the past few years, I'm going to open this up to whatever, do you wish had gotten episodic coverage? So I think what I'm going to do for this is I'm going to go around and any show from history, like, that you obviously limit this to anime, that you would want to review, like, on an episodic basis, like week to week, one episode, like, what would that show be? And, Gabrielle, let's start with...
I just finished Shinsekai Yori, or From the New World, and that's a show that has a ton going on that I'd really love to bite my teeth into, like, idea by idea.
Okay.
At this moment. Also,
all
right. Other stuff I really like. My, most of the Urobuchis, like, I'd kill for Fate Zero if it was coming out now, or Psycho Pass.
Yeah, you missed your chance at Psycho Pass.
Gone pieces.
Could have done the sequel.
Yeah,
oh,
I could have.
I had to do that. Oh, man.
I didn't get that.
Oh, that was so weird, too, because I started out, you know, maybe. I started out changing my expectations. I started out with, I am not, and people were like, oh, you just wanted to be an Urobuchi show. And I think one of my earliest reviews is, I think it's the first episode review. I know this is not going to be an Urobuchi show. I know this is going to be more tamped down, action-based powerhouse, like, a little bit thoughtful, but more, like, gore and action. I knew that from the very beginning. But I did not expect the writing to do what it did, which was go into crazy cuckoo bad.
Well, that's weird anyway. It's called Psycho Pass 2. That's like saying, well, you can't expect it to be like the first season. What? Then why did they make this?
Well, like, I mean, like,
I feel like that's a case where knowing something about it ahead of time is used as a reason to excuse everything that happens in it. Like, it can't possibly be bad because whatever happened in the TV show also happened in the books. Or in the case of Fate Stay Night, well, that's the way it is in the visual novel.
Right.
Hey, guess what? That is not like this. That means it sucked in the visual novel, too. Like, you can't just dismiss every criticism of something because it's in the source material. Like, I hate that argument. We're here to evaluate and talk about what we saw. And if literally, like, something will be deemed flawless because it's an adaptation and it's very faithful, that is bullshit. Like, well, I hate that.
I hate that, too. Like, that's really terrible for streaming reviews. It's come up a couple times where somebody's like, well, this chapter of the manga, and it's like, we're not reviewing the manga, are we? But, like, the thing with Psycho Pass 2 was, like, I think it is valid to go into it with slightly different interpretations because the premise itself, it's like, okay, this guy, we know he's a different writer, but also the premise is not demanding cerebral. The fact that the first season of Psycho Pass was so thoughtful and kind of reserved and cerebral was in itself stunning because the premise is Blade Runner-y. And so, anyway, but, like, yeah, so I was going into it, like, saying, okay, I accept that, honestly, this premise could be done with bombast and action and hype, so, you know. Like, I think that's, so that, it depends on the situation. So it's a very specific, like, individual case basis.
Right. Anyway, back to the question. So, Nick, what show would you, like, if you could just pick anything, what would you do episodic reviews for?
Well, on the Urobuchi line, Madoka would be a pretty fun one to talk about episode to episode. But I think my main choice would probably be Katanagatari, although that would be across a year with double-length ones once a month or something. But I feel that show, it's one of my favorite shows. I really connect with it. And it also has sort of like the just the mix of like really strong character focus and also really central core idea nuggets in every single episode that basically hit everything I like talking about in media. And plus it's by Nisio Isen, and I feel like I just really connect with his style of writing. I really get what he's trying to say normally. So I think that would work really well and just be tons of fun to talk about at length, continuously.
Cool. What about you, Hope?
So I'm of two minds on this. Something that I would like to write up for daily episode reviews, basically anything that I've loved, anything that I've has become a favorite show of mine, or even things that I've just really been moved by, like Michiko and Hutchins just now on Cartoon Network. And that show is not a great show. Like it is. I feel like the universal kind of feeling on that show is like, not great, like, could have been great, but is just good or whatever. Like, that's a predominant thing I hear with Michiko and Hachin. But that would be great to, like, anything that piques my interest, I would love to write about week to week. I enjoy writing streaming reviews more, episode by episode, more than series reviews by a lot. But I'm actually of two minds on this because the other part of my brain is, like, my favorite thing to see episode reviewed, like, by any of our writers, just because we all have, we have such good writers, all of them, so it's like, any single one of them to take on a show that becomes a different show, whether positive or negative. Like, that's the kind of stuff where I really like to see people write about it and react. So Madoka is a great example. Like, somebody starts to write about Madoka and then episode 3 hits and that changes everything. Or for a negative example, something like Future Diary, where every 5 episodes you have to reevaluate what you thought the show was because it just became more ridiculously awful and jaw-dropping. So anything where the show itself changes constantly in a way that is either positive or negative and messes with your expectations. Because I didn't like Psycho Pass 2, but remembering now, like, it sure was fun to write about because it sure did change my expectations every new episode. I was like, well, this can't get any worse. And then the next one, it got worse. It can't get any worse. Like, it got worse, etc. Like, in an endless Ouroboros. Like, that's the best stuff. But for me personally, to write about anything that is makes me feel passionate. So, yeah.
Like, Samurai Flamenco is another example of one that jumps, like, 7 genres through its run. That would be an interesting one to write about.
My answer to this question is Fushigi Yugi. Okay, JazzBebop84 asks, how has reviewing anime changed through the years? Well, it's become less formal, which I'm really happy about. It's less authoritarian, so you don't have people saying, this show is this. They are, the tone is a little bit less, I don't want to say histrionic, but it's a little bit less authoritarian, like I said. It's not, my opinion is this monolithic thing. I feel like it's gotten better as a result of the influence of blogs and all of that stuff. Episodic reviews, I think, are a big change, obviously, and you know, weren't particularly possible before the internet. But I think they've changed for the better. I really appreciate the lack of formality. I think reviews should be about somebody's personal experience with something, not this sort of academic, classical, kind of very stuffy, strict, rote breakdown of what something is, or a product guide. I'm not interested in a product guide either, where basically you're telling me the specs on a car and I'm deciding whether or not I want to buy the car. Like you're it's supposed to be somebody's emotional response to a piece of art that they have seen. And that is the interesting thing about film criticism.
If you like robots, twin tails, and double D's, then this show, yeah, you know, you don't want
that's
that.
That's the product guide.
Yeah.
That's the product guide. I'm just not interested in that. It's not, like, the point of this stuff is to engage with it and be touched by it and moved by it or angered by it or whatever. It's supposed to get something, some kind of a response from you, and good criticism is supposed to articulate that in ways that mean something to someone else and maybe either gives them something to engage with, makes them feel differently, or reflects their own views or whatever. But the internet has kind of allowed criticism to become even more what I feel it's supposed to be, which is that. It's an expression of the way this piece of art made you feel. Not a product guide and not a stuffy academic thing. So that's how I feel it's changed, like, for the positive over the years. Okay, so Cyber Mormon asks, I work for my city's film society, and one of the services we offer is a library of DVDs for rent of classic movies. We have some anime, but most of it is about 10 years old. Bebop, Hacksign. Ooh, Hacksign. Mm-hmm. Evangelion. Nick, you're familiar with that one.
Yep.
What titles are worth acquiring and curating that aren't already streaming for free? They so I guess, like, streaming. If somebody had a film society and they were like, okay, here's the anime you should see. He's saying maybe not 10 to 20 years old. So something from the last, like, 5 years. If you could put one title in there you think everyone should watch if they want to be familiar with anime, I'm going to take Madoka. I'm going to just take right now. So you have to come up with something else. Nick, let's start with you.
Oh, I mean, you have to start with me?
Pulled the rug out from under.
Yeah, geez. And you stole Madoka.
If everyone was going to say that, then,
well,
you know.
it's an easy answer.
I mean, it is the registry one of the last few years. Last few years, one title. I guess I'd go with Eccentric Family, probably.
Okay, yeah, that's
I think that's
a good one.
Really well-rounded, just a good piece of fiction that can relate to people of all ages, so, or of a certain age and up.
Okay, and Hope?
I mean, I feel like Monica was the big one, so just for funsies, you know, it's not academic, but like... Mark Space Dandy, you know, like...
Yeah, I would put the... Yeah, that's a good one.
It's not academic, but it's art, so, you know...
Wait, what'd you choose?
She said Space Dandy.
Space Dandy. It's not smart or thoughtful or whatever, but it's like, you want to see anime style, like, what makes the style of animation different, and here's, mm-hmm. like, 20 different styles by 20 different animators, like, there you go, like, there's Space Dandy.
We should also probably throw Mushishi in there.
Yeah, Mushishi would be a good one. Mushishi is a really good one for, like, here's Eastern perspective. Here is like, specifically Japanese perspective on a, like, episodic, moralistic kind of show that's not moralistic, it's spiritualistic. It's hard to say, but it's very, very, very Japanese in a way that is, like, makes you understand the roots of a worldview. And it's like, oh, okay.
If there weren't, like, the 5-year restriction, I'd put Utena just because that show is so valuable to so many people. It's so transformative to so many that the more people who are exposed to it or have the chance to be exposed to it, the better.
I feel like you could put Yurikuma in there, too. Like, it's nice to see Utena before Yurikuma, but it's still, like, you could just do a little bit of research and go, oh, okay. Penguin Room, I feel like there's too many layers of...
That one's too Japanese.
It's too Japanese. Like, you know, you have to be kind of more into stuff. And
Tatami Galaxy works. That's just on the 5-year marker.
I wouldn't put Tatami Galaxy in anything else where you're trying to, like, introduce people to anime. That's...
Oh, no, not as an introduction.
I mean,
not at all.
All of the Bucci stuff. Like, you just say Madoka, but all of it. Like, Psychopass, yeah, it's in there.
All right.
Psychopass is the new Ghost in the Shell. It's like, if Ghost in the Shell is too old, Psychopass is the new Ghost in the Shell. So there you go.
Okay. 2D Swank asks, how do you draw the line between a show being objectively good or bad versus appealing or not appealing to you? Well, no one in a review is allowed to say this show is objectively bad.
Yeah,
you're not allowed to say that. Because the review is inherently subjective. So I don't know any critic worth his salt that believes his opinion is objectively correct.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, you're doing it wrong if that's, like, what you think a review's purpose is. And if you're responding to a review because you think the author thinks his review is objectively right, well, you're wrong, too. So there's no objectivity. Like, there's such a thing as being, like, a fair judge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about objectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand the desire. It's like, well, this just doesn't appeal to you. Well, but I'm not so close-minded that if you just put something in there, I'm going to automatically reject it. You know, like, a good show is a good show. And, you know, something can be good in spite of it having one or two elements that I don't like or don't personally cotton to. You know, that kind of thing. And everyone has to balance this stuff, but it is not about objectivity. Lone Life asks, what show did you like writing up the most? Like, what was your like, favorite daily streaming show to write up? Nick, let's start with you.
Again, me first.
Yep.
Man, Zach, let me think.
You've only done, like, 7 or 8 of them, so.
You keep spinning the bottle, and it keeps landing on Nick.
Yeah, it just happens. I mean, the easy choice would be one of the two recent ones that I really loved. Like, writing up Snafu is actually really great because that show is basically just 100% character psychology, and I am all about talking about character psychology. This show actually talked about it somewhat too. Like, even in stuff like Shonen Hollywood, that like show had some interesting character stuff, and so like, yeah, I'll jump on that. I'll use that as my angle of attack for that show. But Snafu is all that every day, forever. None of these characters talk about how they actually express how they feel. All of them reflect things that they're feeling underneath that. Yeah, I can easily talk about that for hours and hours.
Shonen Hollywood's an example of a show where, like, our internal statistics suggested that negative amounts of people cared about Shonen Hollywood. Like, like, somehow if you opened, like, the view, like if you looked at the view count on an episode of Shonen Hollywood, it would somehow be, like, negative 36 or something like that. But yeah, your reviews did well for us, and people were asking us to cover the second season of Shonen Hollywood because they liked your reviews. But we couldn't justify that because it. I think literally in a poll where you had 8,000 to 9,000 to 10,000 responses, I think more than that actually. Shonen Hollywood got like 14 votes out of like over 10,000.
It was the most undesirable thing.
Poor Shonen Hollywood.
Poor Shonen Hollywood. But your reviews made me kind of want to watch it. So I don't know. It'll never come out on DVD. So maybe I'll just check it out.
It was pretty interesting, though.
Gabriella, what about you?
Winter season was very rewarding. I'm most satisfied with the Yurikuma ones, even though those were pretty grueling to write. I did churn those out in about 24 hours each. So sometimes I was like, 2,500 words, 24 hours, on top of school, because I go to school full time. But I guess the one I most looked forward to every week from that season, well, from all of them, was Maria the Virgin Witch, because that one was just such a pleasant surprise and so consistently quality. It hit a bunch of my interests. Like, it was a very female-led show that avoided a lot of the pratfalls of the way women are usually depicted in anime, and then turned out to be specifically about how women are presented and present themselves in a male-dominated society, and did a lot of very interesting things with that. And it was just a very fun show to watch and discover alongside other people.
Right. And Hope, what about you?
For two completely different reasons.
Rail Wars.
Yeah. Although I didn't, you know, that had its moments. There has never been anything I didn't enjoy writing up, even like Lord Marksman and Vanitas, which was another, I'll do it. Nobody else wants it. I'll do it. And it was fine. You know, that was a fine show. But that truly gave me joy to write up for two very different reasons. Blood Blockade Battlefront for the positive reasons. Like,
what?
I know. Shocker. But like the most recent, this show's still not over, but like the most recent episode was just, I wrote a ton about it, and I still wasn't able to cover everything that it was doing thematically, cinematically, animation-wise, references. The thing is just packed. It's dense, you know. And for a completely different reason, Psycho Pass 2. Because I really love Psycho Pass, and I was really interested in what they were going to do with it. And it was every new week. It was never bad in the same way twice. Every new episode was different in how it was completely blowing my mind with weird stuff. And I got to just laugh at it. But, I mean, some people didn't like that. But, I mean, at least I was enjoying my, like, at least it wasn't boring. Like, it wasn't boring, and it was fun to explain, okay, here's why this makes no sense. Here's why this is scientifically accurate. Here's why this is character incongruous. Here's why it betrays the first season. Like, I was able to just pound it out, and it was like, and I wasn't going and expecting to hate it. It wasn't a hate watch. It was just a, what is happening right now in front of me, you know? So there you go. Two completely different reasons, those two.
All right. Well, of all the stuff I have done, I would have to say my favorite daily streaming show to write up would be Death Parade.
Because it's the only...
I'm wondering if there's any I've forgotten I've written up. Like,
probably.
I did three in fall. Terror and Resonance, Dramatical Murder, and I'm not sure what the last thing is.
You don't remember.
I don't either, so there you go.
Do you remember who?
Never know.
Well, fall would have been Fate's Day Night.
No, oh, that's right. I'm thinking summer, actually.
Summer.
Right.
Well, last summer, we didn't... Did we start these?
Yeah, we started with the
yeah,
end
of we started like halfway... Eight, through, then, that's right. Yeah, we started like halfway through summer season.
Sailor Moon Crystal.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was the first one. That. Okay.
Yeah.
And
now being written by someone else. So, yeah. Okay. Well, you know, that actually wraps us up. So, that was a lot of fun. And thanks a lot for coming on and talking with us. Really appreciate having you guys on the show.
Yeah. Cool to talk with you guys.
Thank you. Had a lot of fun.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Gabriella and Nick for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks.